702, the Midday Report with Mandy Wiener.
Live, streaming countrywide.
On the Prime Media Plus app.
Yes TV channel 856.
92.7.
And 106 FM.
On the show today, the Joburg mayor apologizes to residents for water problems. Analysis of the approved electricity regulation amendment bill. Thabo Bester and Nandipha Magudumana's lawyers are fighting the Showmax documentary in court. The confessions in the Senzo Meua trial are read out. And it's Friday, so sports and good things too. All of that over the next hour.
702.
Let's walk the talk.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Midday Report on 702 and Cape Talk with me, Mandy Wiener. It's always so interesting to hear how much hitmen are paid, allegedly, for killing their targets. And that detail coming out in the Senzo Meua trial today, that confession being read out. In this instance, one of the accused saying he was paid 45,000 rand for his role. In the AKA trial, we heard about that and reports about how much people were paid, a few hundred thousand there. How do you decide, how do you quantify someone's life? How do you decide what the going rate is for a targeted assassination? In some instances, we've heard about people being paid 5, 10, 15,000 rand. In others, it's millions. Is there a currency for hitmen? It's always interesting to find out that kind of detail. It's a bit dark, a bit cynical, but we'll unpack that a bit later on in the show. And also this court case, Thabo Bester and Nandipha Magudumana's lawyers are fighting against the release of that Showmax documentary. Stephen Budlander, who of course has gone into the private sector, so he's arguing for multi-choice in that matter. So detail coming out there as well. We'll cover those two court cases for you, but let's start with a briefing today, a media briefing by Joburg Water and the Joburg Mayor, Kabelo Gwamanda, joining that briefing. Essentially what they've told us is that the water system is getting back to normal. The water problems are fixed. It's a pressure problem now. So they're telling us that most areas should be back by this afternoon. But crucially also, perhaps, is the fact that Kabelo Gwamanda has apologized to Joburg residents. Have a listen.
Let me express our sincere apologies to residents for the disruption and frustration that outages have caused. As explained previously, we unfortunately have zero control over natural events such as the lightning strike that affected the Ekenhof power station. We have noted and appreciated the concerns raised by residents on the communication and response efforts to restore supply and implement temporary supply measures in the future. These have been committed to and attended to and acted upon with urgency. Thank you very much once again for giving us this opportunity to be able to report back on this issue that has caused wide devastation in the city of Johannesburg.
Wide devastation. That's how the mayor, Kabelo Gwamanda, describes the water crisis and an apology. What is your reaction to that? Do you accept the apology? Do you think it is satisfactory? They have told us consistently that it is old infrastructure. We know that millions need to be spent to replace the infrastructure. Also explaining that it was a natural disaster and they have no control over that. Well, let's have a look further at this briefing. Gloria Motswere, EWN reporter, was there for us. Gloria, good afternoon to you. Take us through what the Joburg water officials are saying about the current status of water supply in Joburg.
Good afternoon, Mandy. As you've mentioned, they say that water has improved. Water supply has improved in most parts of the city. And the two areas that were still struggling with water supply are Linden and Blagowry in Randburg. They're saying that water should be there by this afternoon, like you've mentioned. And they've had to clarify exactly what was happening with that system. And they were saying that it was affected like all the others, but it had issues with returning water supply to residents. On Tuesday, they went to try and figure out what exactly is happening. And it was found that one of the contributing factors to water not being restored and taking as long as it did in that area was the fact that there was a valve that was closed that supplies water to those two areas. And that was part of the contributing factors as to why those two areas spent about 12 days without proper water supply, but they have assured residents that there should be water in the next, from this afternoon and going into the weekend, water should start stabilizing. And they also mentioned that one of the things that they touched on, they acknowledged the fact that there was issues when it comes to water tankers, because there was a lot of residents that were complaining that the city keeps saying that they sent out water tankers, but we can't seem to find them. And they were saying that, to be honest, there was not enough water tankers to accommodate the people that were struggling with water in the last 2 weeks. Logan Munsami from Joburg Water actually gave us a detailed briefing in terms of where the system stands right now. Let's take a listen.
But safe to say, we've enjoyed some very good recoveries on those affected reservoirs in the last 24 hours. Our Linden Reservoir, which was basically empty for a few days, is now currently, as of this morning, sitting at 79% and rising, which is impressive. Our Linden 1 tower is currently at 85%, which is at a very good level and feeding normal. Our Linden 2 reservoir is currently rising at 59%, which is good. The Kensington B reservoir has been fairly stable at 70% and is maintaining that level, which is good. The Kensington B tower, we had some, we had to manipulate our systems in order to boost the Linden systems over the last few days. But currently it's recovered very nice overnight and feeding normal at 76%. The Helder Crane reservoir and tower is at 59 and 62%, which is acceptable. And followed by Constantia Tower, which is feeding normal at 72%. Our Horizon Tower and Waterfall Tower, which draws off directly from the Randwater Main, is actually sitting very nice. It's currently at 67 and 69% respectively. And our Blegari Reservoir, which has been empty for a period of days, is now at 65% and improving, which is impressive. There are fragmented areas spread off or within the Blegari Reservoir distribution network that are currently experiencing poor pressures. It's mainly due to airlocks. It's also mainly due to the fact that we have been filling up the Blegari Reservoir. We expect it to stabilize in, during the course of today, after which those poor pressures experienced in the upper part of Blegari will normalize.
So Gloria, setting out there quite clearly about where we stand at the moment, an acknowledgement, an apology from the mayor as well. Did you get the sense from the briefing today that there were lessons learnt and they have a plan going forward?
Yes, Mandy, they do say that there were lessons learnt from this outage, and they're saying that there's an important priority when it comes to dealing with the aging of the infrastructure in the city. And most of the time when we have these issues, it comes back to the aging infrastructure, not having a backup plan when it comes to electricity. But the city is actually working with Joburg Water and City Power to make sure that should there be situations like this again, there's a backup plan that can be used to make sure that the power outages don't affect water supply to these areas.
Gloria, thank you very much. Gloria Motshwere, EWN reporter, who was at that briefing today. So there you have it. If you are still being affected by the water situation, they're telling us that water will be back this afternoon. Randburg specifically is the one area that is still being affected. And an apology from the mayor. How does that sit with you?
702, The Midday Report, Monday to Friday,
12 to 1 p.m.
The National Assembly has approved the Electricity Regulation Amendment Bill. It looks at transmission specifically, about the transmission system operator company, which will be responsible for the electricity transmission system. Remember, this is all to do with the fact that Eskom was unbundled and is being split into three different divisions. So what does this mean for us? What does it mean for you? What does it mean for the distribution of electricity? Chris Yelland is the MD at EE Business Intelligence, energy expert, joining us now. Chris, good afternoon to you. Thank you for your time. This bill, there's penalties for people or entities that steal electricity. It makes provision for the transmission system operator company. What exactly does it do?
Now, look, I think the first thing we have to understand, Mandy, is this is not something that is going to just bring it into load shedding in the next year or so. It really is a bill, and hopefully it becomes an act of parliament, that puts in place the necessary legal framework for the unbundling of Eskom into generation, transmission, and distribution. And in particular, you know, you mentioned the transmission company. This is really important to establish the transmission company and to establish its role and powers and what it's intended to do. And in summary, it prepares South Africa's electricity supply industry for a more market-orientated sector with a competitive and diversified generation sector that will include, of course, the former Eskom generators, the power stations. It will include municipal generators. It will include public-private partnerships. It includes IPPs and so-called prosumers, which are customers that also generate electricity. And they will all be supplying electricity into a separate, independent national grid company. The company has been established, so-called NTCSA, the National Transmission Company of South Africa. And it is going to operate initially as a subsidiary company to Eskom Holdings in a sort of quasi-independent form, and will ultimately become a fully independent state-owned entity that is not part of Eskom. And it's important because this is a company that will buy power from a number of, well, a complete range, a diversified range of generators on level playing fields. And this has been the fact that transmission was part of Eskom, gave preference to its own generation. It really inhibited investment in the transmission sector and in the generation sector. And it's absolutely critical to have an independent grid company if you're going to attract outside investment yeah. in new forms of generation that are not Eskom.
On that point, the EFF is arguing that this new entity is leaning too far towards privatization. We know that all the voting parties except the EFF supported the bill, but there are still some concerns about the independence of this transmission entity. What are those concerns?
Well, first of all, one needs to state clearly that this is not privatization and that the EFF are wrong in any such suggestion because the so-called grid company, the NTCSA, is initially going to be 100% owned by Eskom. It's a subsidiary company, and Eskom is a state-owned entity, 100%. And this transitionary arrangement will last for about 5 years, at which point it's intended that the transmission business of Eskom become separate from Eskom, but still a state-owned entity. So it's certainly not privatization. What it does open the door to is, the emergence of independent power producers, municipal power producers, and customers who generate power. Now, this is not something new. This is happening already. It's been happening for years. So one should not see this electricity regulation amendment bill as, a privatization. Not at all. But it does facilitate non-Eskom generation into the mix. But that has been happening, and this is intended to accelerate it.
Chris, thank you very much for explaining that. Chris Yelland, energy expert, unpacking that for us, having a look at this new piece of legislation which looks at the transmission of electricity. As I mentioned, there are some concerns around the independence and transparency, largely just from the EFF around the Electricity Regulation Amendment Bill.
And now it's back to Mandy Wiener on the Midday Report.
This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
12:21 on the Midday Report. Lots of reaction to the mayor's apology there. Mandy, the recent water problems are a result of incompetence as the Eskom debacle has been going on for over 16 years. The Minister of Electricity expects us to believe they're improving supply. What an absolute diabolical set of lies. Good afternoon, Mandy. It is accepted that natural disasters do occur and more frequently than in the past, and we need to acknowledge this. The issue in the water crisis we're experiencing is that there are seemingly no effective recovery plans. The fact that a valve was left closed shows that no structured plans that should include verifications of interventions are not carried out. So it seems as though that apology is falling somewhat flat at the moment, that apology from the Joburg mayor. How do you feel about it?
702, the Midday Report, Monday to Friday,
12 to 1 p.m.
Confession statements by two of the accused in the Senzo Miyiwa trial are being read out at the moment. Remember, it took 5 months to get to this point. There was a trial within a trial to establish the admissibility, and Judge Rata Mokgwatleng ruling that those statements made by the first two accused were made freely and voluntarily. So we're now hearing in quite a bit of detail what has come out in those statements. And one of the statements alleges that the murder was ordered by Kelly Khumalo. Let's have a listen in now to what is happening there.
E hosteli endaweni yami ePhumulong ebasuthwini section ngiye ngathola ucingo kusuka kubangani bami uMakho Buthelezi noMakhimbi Buthelezi bobabini bebakade behlala ePhumulong bebahlala eFort Loras hostel.
So that's one of the statements currently being read out in court in the Senzo Miyiwa trial. So more detail coming out there. And I can tell you, just to give you a sense, the visuals at the moment on TV are of two of the accused looking somewhat forlorn, resting their chins on their hands. The judge is listening attentively. And that is because these confessions are now being read out. It took 5 months, as I said, to get to this point. But we are now hearing in more extensive detail what allegedly happened and what is contained in those confessions. We are hoping to speak to Khumotso Modise about that in a little while. She is in the courtroom at the moment giving us regular updates, so we'll bring you that story a bit later on.
702.
The Midday Report with Mandy Wiener.
Let's walk the talk.
Also in court at the moment, a very last-minute ditch application by Thabo Bester and Nandipa Magudumana. They're trying to stop Showmax from airing a four-part documentary called Tracking Thabo Bester. You may remember we actually spoke to the producers of that a couple of weeks ago, and they're saying that it threatens their rights. Showmax and MultiChoice, of course, is responding in court at the moment. MultiChoice General Counsel Stephen Budlander says Thabo Bester's bid to block the broadcast is motivated by the fact that he's aggrieved that he was not paid. He has not profited from that documentary. On the other hand, Magudumana says that she hasn't granted any rights to Showmax or MultiChoice and any party to film and produce a documentary in her name. Alpha Ramashwana, EWN reporter in court for us. Alpha, let's start with the argument that's being made by Nandipa Magudumana and Thabo Bester. What are they saying?
Good afternoon, Mandy. Well, yes, we are at the Johannesburg High Court today. And by the way, there are delays here, many delays. The court is yet to start. But Thabo Bester has filed an urgent application yesterday where he wants certain parts of the Tracking Thabo Bester documentary series by Showmax to be put on hold. He says there are certain parts that he feels like would infringe his constitutional right to dignity, and is also arguing that he wasn't asked for consent. He wasn't given a heads up that this is what is going to be in the documentary. And Thabo Bester's legal team is basically in the application saying that there are certain parts in that documentary that need to be prohibited from airing because they are going to stop Thabo Bester from having a fair trial. And that's their argument today. Nandipa Magudumana, on the other hand, wants the whole series not to go on air today. And she's saying that she wants to be given the recordings and she wants to view the whole series before it actually goes on air. And that is why her lawyers are also here today to argue that she needs to be given time to go through each and every single episode of the four-part documentary series and see that it's not infringing on any of her rights and see that it won't stop her from having a fair trial. As we know that in June, they are headed back to court, Mandy, where they are facing charges alongside other accused. And we do know that at the moment, Showmax is saying that everything in that documentary series is already in the public domain, has already been reported by the media, several media outlets. And we do know that, you know, there are a number of journalists that are going to be on the on the series, and this is what they're arguing, that what is going to be aired is what is already known to the public. This time it's just being put on the screen by Showmax. So we are going to be seeing what the arguments will be. We'll also be seeing what the judgment will be today here at the Johannesburg High Court.
You did mention the fact that there are delays. I imagine much of that argument being made on papers so far, and MultiChoice arguing that Thabo Best is upset essentially because he hasn't made any money out of this documentary. What are they arguing?
Yes, Mandy, so far all the arguments are on paper so far, and they are saying that Thabo Best was not given a letter which would essentially tell him how much he's set to make, if he's set to make any money from this, and they feel that it's unfair that they're going to be publishing this highly anticipated four-part documentary series and not give him any sort of remuneration in a way. So Thabo Best is actually also looking at the, if I may say, the economic side of this, while Nandipa Makudumana, on the other hand, just doesn't want to see this documentary going on air at all. And Thabo Best did say, while he knows that he's been convicted on other crimes before, he does think that he has the constitutional right to actually earn something or benefit something from this. It's a little bit different from Nandipa, who's saying she doesn't want this to go on air at all until she's reviewed all the footage that's going to go on air.
And Alpha, what are those delays? What's preventing this matter from actually being heard?
Well, there are other matters on the court roll today. The judge was actually dealing with two other matters before this one. And when it was time for Thabo Best, Nandipa Makudumana, this is Showmax, to start, the lights just went off, Mandy. Another case of electricity just coming in the way of court proceedings. So the lights went off and there had to be a short adjournment. And he did say that as soon as the lights are back on, everything will be back in court and we'll see what the arguments will be.
Really is laughable. Alpha, thank you very much. Alpha Ramashwana, EWN reporter in a court for us at the moment, as the Thabo Best and Nandipa Makudumana, both of them bringing this very, very late application to try and stop Showmax. Thabo Best speaking there about his dignity being impinged and the fact that he feels that, that this should not have been made. I imagine there's definitely a case against the fact that there is no dignity there to impinge at the moment, considering he literally escaped from prison and had to be extradited back to the country. So I do wonder about that. And as they say, most of this is in the public domain. So I can't imagine a very, very watertight case by the lawyers for Thabo Best and Nandipa Makudumana. I'm very curious to hear what you have to think about that. Send us a WhatsApp voice note.
WhatsApp Mandy
on 072-702-1702.
Afternoon, Mandy. Great show. You know, this Joburg water story that has been going on for 2 weeks now is really a joke. It is really a joke, considering that the cronies who put Kabelo Gwamanda in power are nowhere to be seen when troubles like this come. And to think that the Joburg water guys are going to take their job seriously with a boss that doesn't have matric and an ex-consta, then you're joking. You really, really, really are joking that they'll do a serious job. How can you forget to open a valve? You know what?
Good day, Mandy. You know this Thabo Best thing? Who does he think he is? What dignity? A dignity from a rapist and a murderer? Hi, please. Oh, hi, this thing is annoying. Why should they get a permission from a rapist and a murderer? Oh, he's a joke, Mandy. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Everyone's so frustrated. You can hear it in the voice notes. So on this Kabelo Gwamanda thing, I think we all know that he's a paper mayor and that he's a proxy for this coalition government. And I think it's only fair to say that. And the irony, of course, is last week I asked the Gauteng Premier, Panyazi Lesufi, to comment on the water issue. And he said, no, it's for the mayor to comment on. And that's just outrageous, because we know that the mayor's not actually doing anything. But he's apologized to everyone now. So how does that apology land with you? Do you get the sense that actually it is authentic? I think a lot of people don't feel that way. On this issue of Thabo Bester, lots of responses to his argument around dignity. Hey, Mandy, I feel so strongly that Bester and his accomplice should not be idolized by making a movie about their dastardly activities, from Richard in Knysna. So we spoke to the producer, and I think they made the point that actually they're highlighting the investigative journalism around this case and how exactly it happened, that it was exposed. So I don't think it is a glamorization of Thabo Bester, but I take your point. Hi, Mandy. This Bester criminal has more rights than us. Watch, he'll get his way, John. Hi, Mandy. Are criminals even allowed to benefit commercially from their crimes or the telling of their story? Tiri, no, they are not. You are not allowed to pay. Well, I mean, you shouldn't be paying for interviews anyway, but we know that there are some media that do, but you cannot pay anyone who has been convicted or is currently in prison for to do an interview about their crime. So I don't think that they're arguing that they want money from this documentary. They're arguing that their rights are being infringed.
702.
The Midday Report with Mandy Wiener.
Let's walk the talk.
I told you earlier that the confessions in the Senzo Meyiwa trial currently being read out. We took you live to the courtroom. Our reporter Khumotso Madise has managed to step out now and joins us. Khumotso, thank you very much for being able to wangle your way out of the courtroom to speak to us. We are getting some detail here about the confessions being read out. So we're hearing about amounts. We're hearing about who gave the order. Tell us about all of that.
That's right, Mandy. I think it's the information that we've all been waiting to hear. And it's detailed quite elaborately in the confession statements by Bongani Ntanzi and Mugal Kudelosvia. According to Ntanzi, he was called. He received a call from his friends, and he says that he was told that there's a job that had to be done. And he then said, sure, I'll make my way. And he moved from Carltonville, where he was stationed at a mine, and he came to Johannesburg. Now, he says this all happened in mid-October. We know that that's around the time that Senzo Meyiwa was murdered in 2014. And he says that, you know, when he got to Johannesburg, they all gave, you know, it was detailed by the group who would be stationed where. And he was told that he would be going into the house with Carlos. Now, we do know that Carlos is the other name that Ntobisi Ngcube, the third accused, uses. And so he says that it was agreed that they would go into the house and the others would be outside, and Fiso Nduli, who is the third, the fifth accused, who actually called Ntanzi to organize this, according to the confession, would be the driver. He says that while they were in the house, he also says that it's important to say that he also says while they were planning, it was then revealed that it was actually King Khumalo who had approached them to murder Senzo Meyiwa, and she was the one that was going to be paying for this hit. And then he's, you know, in the statement, he goes into how Meyiwa was killed, saying that when they got into the house, you know, Ngcube would then ask for money, would ask for money, and he would ask for cell phones. And those were the exact words that were used by Kinela Mazala, Mandy, when he was on the stand, saying they simply said cell phones and money. That is detailed in the confession as well. And then we heard from Ndanzi about how Meyiwa was then shot during a scuffle, and they then left the house, went to the hostel, and he was initially paid 15,000 rand on that night, and he would later be paid 30,000 rand the day afterwards before he went back to Carltonville.
Crucial detail, as you've mentioned. So Kili Kumalo's name being mentioned again. It is interesting, and I think that it'll be interesting to hear from the state about why Kili Kumalo has not been charged alongside these accused, if they are naming her as the person who gave the instruction, and how the NPA intends explaining that.
Yes, you know, we heard from Brigadier Bongani Kininda while he was on the witness stand in the trial, within the trial, that they actually did want Kili Kumalo to be arrested alongside the men. In fact, when the warrant of arrest was prepared, Kininda told the court that Kili Kumalo was also listed there, but the state chose to go the route of arresting and prosecuting the men that are in the dock first. But I think it's interesting also that the second confession statement, Mandy, that is by Muskokunela Smia, has also detailed Ken Khumalo. Now, these are confession statements, I should say, that are being read by the police officers who took them. So that is Lieutenant Colonels Raphadu and Mboto. Now, both of these statements are taken in different places, one in Diepkloof and another in Moroka. But the statements, really, there's so many similarities in them. And it's clear from both men, from their confession statements, that Kelly Khumalo, according to them, was behind the hit and the murder of Senzo Mlilwa.
And Khomoso, to be clear on that point, because we know that there was a trial within a trial, the two accused are now, are they denying the veracity of the contents? They no longer stand by them.
They have completely distanced themselves from the confession statements, and they are maintaining this. They're saying that it was police who came to them with these statements that were already written and forced them to sign it. They said that they were severely beaten, they were severely assaulted, and told to sign these confession statements. We even heard that the first accused, Musisiya, saying he signed to save his life. And so the men are still insisting that they had nothing to do with the confession statements. This is despite the court ruling yesterday that these statements were taken or were made freely and voluntarily.
Khomotso, thank you very much. Khomotso Modise, EWN reporter, stepping out of that Senzo Miura trial for us to unpack those statements. And it really is intriguing, fascinating detail. It is what we've been waiting for. Of course, crucially, the accused say that they no longer stand by these statements. But we are now getting more allegations against Kelly Khumalo, more detail about how much the hitmen were allegedly paid as well. So keep watching, keep listening to that one.
702. Mandy Wiener.
Weekdays, 12 to 1 p.m.
So our lives coming to a shuddering halt yesterday because of our lack of access to the internet and people all over the country really being impacted by that massive internet outage. We now know that it was caused by the undersea cables, or some of the undersea cables at least, being impacted, damage being done to them. And it's just remarkable to really appreciate how reliant we are on technology. I finished the show at 1 o'clock and immediately I had no internet access after that, and I had to catch a flight. And when you can't urgently call an Uber or any kind of e-hailing service, you have to go analog, right? So I had to run and go and find a taxi on the side of the road to take me to the airport so I didn't miss my flight. How's that for hashtag middle class problems? But I did make it. But when you don't have internet access, I think that it really does impact all of us. So let's understand what happened, because I'm sure many of you were affected by this. Arthur Goldstuck, CEO of Worldwide Works, joining us. Arthur, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Mandy.
So I've just described my little sad story about how this affected me. I think everybody was affected by this yesterday. What do we now know about these undersea cables? What actually happened to them, and how it landed up affecting us?
The only thing we know at this stage is that at least three of those cables went down. And chances are there's been further knock-on damage since then. But we can guess what happened, because we had a similar situation a year or two ago, in fact last year, when also two major cables were cut simultaneously. And the cause of that was an underground earthquake, because, or rather an underwater earthquake, because these cables run along the seabed. And we tend to forget or don't realize that the seabed isn't flat. It's almost mountain ranges under the water. And in those mountain ranges, you can find rockfalls happening. And rockfalls under the sea have actually resulted in cables being snapped. And then the other constant danger is what they like to call seismic activity, a euphemism for an earthquake. And an underwater earthquake can also result in cables being snapped. And that's the most likely cause of three major cables being broken at the same time. And the reason that you would find that happening to multiple cables on many occasions is the fact that they tend to follow the same routes along the seabed, because when the cables are laid down, the surveyors of the seabed for the best route for the cable will look for the path of least resistance. And that means that most of the cable companies will follow similar routes, but that also then makes all of them vulnerable to the same activity.
Arthur, when you speak about a cable, we're not speaking about like a cable, like most people would understand it. This is a great big thick thing, right? Put it into perspective for us.
So if you have fiber to the home, for example, or fiber to the business, typically it's one small fiber line that is almost hair thin in clothing plastic that brings you, could be up to typically 200 to 400 meg per second connection to your home. Now, those undersea cables consist of thousands of these strands operating at extremely high capacity, and it could be as much as, for example, 40 terabits per second, which is a million times the capacity of our little cables. But it's still a massive cluster of these same little fiber lines, all enclosed in an armor housing. In other words, it's a steel or a metal housing that protects the cables from the elements, from, let's say, storms at sea or sea creatures trying to break through them, biting through them. They're unable to do so because it's a thick armor. But that can't withstand a major earthquake undersea.
And Arthur, lastly, how long does it take to fix this, and how will it be impacting us here in South Africa?
It's such a difficult question, because the last time this happened, it took about 2 weeks, because a ship first had to go out to sea to find the break, to find the cause of the break, and then to scope the extent of repair required. And that's what's going to happen here now. And apparently there's only two ships off the coast of Africa, both coasts of Africa, West and East Coast, that are capable of performing this. So they first have to decide exactly what they have to take out to sea to conduct the repairs. And then they still have to get there. And once they're there, they'll know for the first time how long it will take them exactly to repair it. So this could be a matter of weeks. It could be months.
Arthur, thank you so much for explaining that to us. Arthur Goldstuck, CEO of Worldwide Works, explaining what happened to your internet connection yesterday, that those undersea cables, and how you may continue to be impacted.
Sports Wrap with Tholakele Mganga.
Tholakele Mganga in studio in your Manchester United shirt, Nochal. You're very brave to wear that thing, hey?
We can't lose tonight because we're not playing. That's why I'm wearing it.
You can lose on Sunday, though.
I would. The Sunday is for the Lord. I don't get involved in such things.
You're playing Liverpool on Sunday, no?
I know.
Yeah.
Oh, and they're chasing a quadruple, so you know it's going to be bad.
I know.
So, Mandy, that's one of the four games you can look forward to in the FA Cup this weekend. Of course, we know that we're into the quarterfinal stage. The fixtures start from tomorrow with Wolves up against Coventry, Manchester City up against Newcastle. That's also a very interesting one. But Newcastle, for all the money that they have within their backroom staff, they don't actually splash the cash with a lot of their players. Unlike the owners when they took over Manchester City, they were willing to put big investment into the club. So that will be an interesting one as well. Then Chelsea, they still have an opportunity to win a trophy this season. They take on Leicester on Sunday. Then, of course, the eternal rivals, Manchester United and Liverpool.
Do you think you're going to win?
No.
Okay. Shh.
Not even a little bit, guys. We'll be glad if you score a goal. Small victories.
Tragic. It is so tragic. Nedbank Cup this weekend.
Yes, Kaizer Chiefs fans, it's another weekend that they can just sit and watch other teams play this weekend. Of course, some of the teams in action, we'll see Milford up against Stellenbosch. Milford, that game is taking place tonight. Then Richards Bay up against SuperSport United. Chippa take on Ravens. Orlando Pirates in action against Hungry Lions. Despite claiming that 6-0 win over Crystal Lake in the last round, I think it wasn't a very convincing performance from Jose Riviero's side. But they'll be looking to make sure that once again against lower league opposition, they are going full out to get a big score and advance. Interestingly enough, Jose Riviera has actually never lost a game in this competition, because you remember that he took over last season and he won the tournament. Then on Sunday, we've got the General up against TS Galaxy. It's TS Galaxy's first game back since that accident in Mombela, where unfortunately a woman whose car collided with the team bus lost her life. Then on Sunday, we've got Mamelodi Sundowns up against Maritzburg United.
Okay, so that's all of the football that we can look at. There's been quite a lot of talk in rugby around the captain of the box, Siya Kolisi, what's going to happen. There were rugby awards last night. Eben Etzebeth coming out as the two-time in total.
Back-to-back.
Yeah. Peter Steph Du Toit has been won it three times, no, though.
Yes.
But not back-to-back. Yes. He's done.
Peter Steph did win 2018 and 2019.
He's won three in total.
Yes.
But only two of those three were back-to-back.
Yes.
Yes, we're on the same page. What's happening now about captaincy and all of that?
I think for both Rassie Erasmus and SA Rugby, they're going to look realistically, because Coach Rassie put it very nicely. He likes having a coach in South Africa that on a weekend he can just call him up and say, a captain, we can just call him up and say, let's have a drink and discuss what's going to happen. With Sia in France, that's not easy to do. I think because Rassie has said he will still be selected, the captaincy will be an issue. Eben has come back to South Africa. There are those questions about maybe he could take over. There's been some discussion from some fans that say maybe Lukanyo Am is an option. But at the end of the day, Sia, he's been nicknamed the head boy of South African sports because that's how beloved he is. He's managed to turn his popularity not just into rugby but into getting a lot of South African fans behind other national teams. So it's not just about the armband.
Yeah,
it's
I would argue that he is more than a captain at the moment for the Springboks.
It's someone that needs to also have the personality. And I think Eben and Lukanyo, it's not to say they don't have the personality. They've just never been given those opportunities because I think within that Springbok team, everybody's a leader. But can you take it to that extra level where you've got the whole country literally backing the box?
I know that you're not the biggest fan, but have you been watching Indian Wells? Did you see what happened with the Bees last night?
I saw the Bees. I that was really funny because I was watching Carlos Alcaraz like run off court and then the people there just like strolling and I'm like, oh, he's the only one that was scared. But also the day before, Coco Gauff finally turned 20. We are getting older every day. She turned 20 and then the crowd sang happy birthday to her. And then she's discussed what other things she's focusing on as she heads into her 20s. She's hoping to win more Grand Slams. Of course, the Olympics are coming up this year. She says either she wants to medal this year or look forward to 2028. But there are quite some interesting matchups to look forward to. And the fact that the big names are still there as we head into...
Except for Novak.
Oh, Mandy, always this Novak Djokovic of yours. As long as Carlos Alcaraz is there, it's fine.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a cracker. Sinner versus Alcaraz. So that's great tennis for you to watch this weekend. Tolokele, thank you so much.
Good things.
Good things.
With Brent Lindeke.
And as always, to wrap up your week, Brent Lindeke, the good things guy, joining us to give us some good news. Brent, happy Friday.
Happy Friday, Mans, and happy Friday to all the Cape Talk and 702 listeners. It's great to be on air. I've actually just rushed off stage so that I could tune in and give you some good news.
Well, thank you very much for doing that. I appreciate you quickly putting your Superman suits on the side so you could jump on radio. What good news stories do you have for us, Brenty?
All right, so this is a story that we featured on Good Things Guy a little while ago about an old dog called Duke that the Boksburg SPCA were left shocked when they found him abandoned at their front gate. It was evident that this pup was an ex-hunting dog covered in many old scars and suffering from several broken toes that had healed badly. He was just really, really in bad shape. We'd written the story to sort of see if we could just get assistance to help the SPCA and sort of get South Africans rallying behind them, as we know South Africans tend to do and are good at. And today we featured the most incredible update. This dog is super, super old. The chances of him being adopted are in the sort of 0%. And there is a family that have offered their home for this old pup to live his last couple of, weeks, months or years out. And I think this is such an incredibly important story, not because of what had happened to the dog, but because of the hearts of South Africans. When we are called up to be kind and to help even just another animal, that's what we'll do. We always are there to help each other. And it goes back to what I say, right? In times of tragedy, look for the helpers, and those helpers are South Africans.
Always look for the helpers, as you always say. And that's just one of the great stories that you have for us. What other good news do you have, Brent?
Right. So there's a TikTok dancer. She's a high schooler. Her name's JD. She's actually the sister of the musician Dan V, who's going absolutely viral on TikTok with her and her best friend at school. They did this unplanned dance. I think the video this morning was sitting at almost 1 million views in just 24 hours. And every single person that's watched this incredible dancing video, they're both super, super talented. They're all just speaking about the unity of South Africans. A lot of the South Africans that are in the comments are basing it on a real-life movie that was featured, I think, with Disney from the year 2000 called The Color of Friendship, which was based on a true story about a South African and an American teen that become friends. And I just love this story because it does show us that unity. The Booker remind us always that we are stronger together. But here's a group of high schoolers that are doing exactly the same.
Oh, Brent, that's such a great story. I need to check that out. I'm a big Dan V fan. He knows this. So I better go check that out. Have you shared that on your socials?
It is. It's all over the socials. It is on Good Things, Guy, if you want to go see. And it is obviously on TikTok, but we've embedded that video so you can watch it straight from Good Things, Guy. Or you can go check out JD on TikTok. It's the @ and then JADEY_RSA. I promise you that simple little video is going to give you all the feels.
Brent, as always, thank you so much for bringing us your good vibes. I know that you've rushed off stage to chat to us to make sure that we end the week with some good news. So thank you so much, and I hope you have a brilliant weekend.
Absolutely. Everybody in the studio, I love you. I love what you do. And to the rest of South Africa, as I always say, wishing you only good things.
Only good things. Brent Lindekue, the Good Things Guy.
The Midday Report.
Okay, so I have a split screen in studio at the moment. One is on the SABC, there's Newsroom Africa, there's ENCA, and there are court cases on the go at the moment. I think that they are both fighting for attention at the moment because they are really interesting. So in the one, we've got those confessions, those much-anticipated confessions in the Senzo Miyiwa trial currently being read out, and we're getting all of the detail in those confessions about who was paid what, who gave the orders to kill Senzo Miyiwa. All of that is coming out. In the other court case, we've got Thabo Beste and Nandipa Mgudumana's lawyers arguing that Showmax cannot stream the series that it's supposed to launch this afternoon because they're saying that it does impinge on their dignity and they didn't give the rights. So that's a race against time as well. So both of those are happening at the moment. Get yourself a big, big box of popcorn because they are both well worth watching. You can go and do that.